This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Julian and Chuang here, wishing you a very happy new year on this 2nd January 2019. And we're just looking at economic and stock prices as we start the new year. Singapore has reported the fourth quarter GDP growing at a very ominous 2.2% for the fourth quarter of 2018, and ending the year, the whole year, achieving about a 3.3% growth for their economy.
That's right. So, of course, Singapore, being like Malaysia, an outwardly focused, export-driven economy, it's kind of like a proxy and a larger mirror image of our fortunes in Malaysia. 1.5 to 3.5% is the outlook for 2019, and of course, unlike Malaysia, Singapore provides a range of GDP expectations, and 2 percentage points is actually a really wide range. But more intriguingly, Brigadier General Lee Hsien Yong said that he sees major uncertainties on the global policy front because of the impasse trade-wise between America and China.
So, American China.
Yeah, and PMI data as of December for both China and America seem to be coming off by a great margin. And that is quite a foreboding sign for risky assets going forward.
That's right. If you look at the Singapore trend, it's also quite worrying, because if the fourth quarter is 2.2 and the whole year is 3.3, know that we are going through a downtrend. And Singapore, of course, is an exporting nation, same as Malaysia. Yep. So this will have implications for Malaysia. As for Malaysia, last month, the World Bank lowered its GDP growth forecast for 2018 to 4.7% from 4.9%. Earlier in October, namely due to two factors: lower government spending as well as a decline in investment, both public and private.
Yeah, so Jules, you know how share markets are very good forward indicators of where sentiment is and where business spending goes, right? So December was a really bad month for share markets all over the world, Malaysia included. And I tried to put Vishnu Varathan on the spot this morning. You know, he's from Mizuho Bank in Singapore. He does a strategy, and we asked him about his message to investors, and he was actually quite measured and nuanced in his response. He said, I asked him whether, you know, it's time for investors to actually double down on the bottoms and to, you know, try and buy on the bounce, or whether it's a more interesting proposition to be in cash and gold at this point in time, being safe haven asset classes. And he said that he was very measured. He said, depends on how. And you know how these money people are always, you know, their fallback response is always on risk profile, right? It all depends on how your risk profile sits and whether you're risk averse or not.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I don't think
you should just look at headline numbers,
correct,
but look at where you are in life as well.
Correct. So the message I took away from him was that unless you're a very risk on individual and you've got lots of cash to burn and you're not leveraged in any way, shape or form, then you would be selling
Who isn't, right?
Who isn't, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so, you know how gold ended really well in December 2018. Yeah.
That's right. You would be happy because you have kilograms of that in your vault.
Tons. Yeah, I've got tons of bullion in my house.
We'll be checking in with Vishnu later on when we talk about the market. And Chuang, I think you should also focus on the three very famous analysts that we have in the country.
Julian Ng?
No, who are the ex-PM, the current PM, and the future PM.
The future PM.
Tun Dr. Mahathir actually said he gave a more optimistic tone of the country, saying that if we work hard enough, then we will achieve developed nation status by 2019.
Yeah, that's a very very erudite statement from the current Prime Minister.
Very cryptic,
as he always is. And then the Prime Minister-designate, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, he has urged Putrajaya to focus on the important issues affecting the nation and to not pay attention to the little side swipes that from the unseen hands.
And
what he means by that, I don't know.
Unseen hands, well, make what you will out of that. But certainly, I think a lot of people are concerned about unemployment, which Anwar, apparently he did this survey with 3,000 students, and some of the worries have surfaced, like very high youth unemployment and cost of living. And I guess those are the perennial themes that the government has to think about.
Wage stagnation was another one.
Absolutely, yeah. And not to be outdone, Chuang, our ex-PM, is all doom and gloom for him. One that Malaysia was facing tougher times because of the falling stock market, falling foreign reserves, and also slowing economic growth.
He said that 2019 will be a challenging year for the people. And of course, it will be challenging because of all the global maelstroms facing the nation as well as the rest of the world. But some perspective needed, of course, because a lot of these global maelstroms are not domestic emanating, right? They've come from larger global issues.
Admittedly, a lot of these problems were also being set since the times of the ex-prime ministers, right? And the most recent one being PM Najib. So maybe he had a hand to play in the kind of tough times that we are going through right now.
Okay, some stuff on cash and jewels. No more taking your cash to casinos to change in the chips, because Bank Negara Malaysia is saying that cash transactions of over 25,000 ringgits now needs to be reported from Bank Negara to Bank Negara, obviously to address anti-money laundering concerns. And if you think that is bad, actually the dragnet has actually become narrower, because in the past it used to be 50,000 ringgit. Now, for 25,000 ringgit, casinos and banks must report the identity to them.
Absolutely. It's just a process of sanitizing the money, taking them to the casino and recycling it and coming out as, you know, clean and legal money. So they want to put a stop to that. I think this is probably to stop the creation of future Jolos, future, kleptocrats, maybe, perhaps,
yes,
right? If they go to casinos.
So if you take the same amount of money, 25,000 ringgit, and 1 ringgit, obviously, to pass the threshold to a bank, and you try and change that to a banker's check, a banker's draft, electronic transfer, FD rollovers, even renewals.
Those are excluded.
Those are excluded.
Yeah.
Oh, so you can actually take your cash there, right?
I guess those are having their own little form of governance and reporting.
Of course.
You would be very hard to pass through 50,000 through the system without being notice, I think.
Yeah. Actually, if you go to a money changer right now, and if you try and get more than 3,000 ringgit change in foreign currency, that also must be reported to Bank Negara.
Absolutely.
3,000 ringgit only, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, Chuang, you would have the beef to pick with this, because Bank Negara has this great big cashless push. You know, this is apart from the money laundering aspect, the corruption aspect, with which our PM, Dr. M, said that, you know, cashless will promote the anti-corruption agenda. But going cashless, Bank Negara has a big agenda on that as well.
Well, it's a global agenda. I mean, look around the world. Larry Summers of the US, Mario Draghi of the ECB, Narendra Modi of India, three of the largest economic regions and zones around the world have been going and basically victimizing cash and trying to accelerate this whole push towards a digital economy. The larger mantra, of course, for them is that illegal activities must be stamped on. And I agree with that. But
like it on the whole, though.
Because it's Big Brother, isn't it? Because once you go fully digital, every single transaction that you make and receive can be accounted for and monitored by the government. If you have a government that is honest, transparent, and open and responsible, more power to you or more power to us. But what if you don't? Then right. What happens?
Okay, so that's one area that they would have to work on. But just looking at Bank Negara's targets, those are not really big asks. From the financial sector blueprint for 2011 to 2020, e-payment transactions per capita, the target is to be 200 by 2020. Not a lot, actually, Chong.
Yeah, actually, Malaysia's actually, okay, on a peer basis, right? And I'm not saying that the UK is a peer to us, but 10 years ago when I was working in the UK, debit card transactions were a big thing in London. Everybody was using their debit card transactions. And that's good, because debit card transactions basically means that you can't use your card to pay for stuff if you don't have the money inside. So it's not credit, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's safer in a way.
That's right. And I think that e-payment is also gaining a lot of traction. I've been using a lot of e-payment recently and, I love it. Compared to debit card, the target for Bank Negara is just 30 per capita by 2020. And I guess that reflects the momentum.
Is that annual or daily or monthly or weekly?
That would be annual. I think per capita.
30 per year?
Per year. I mean,
that's
nothing.
That's nothing. Just over two a month.
You've done more than that in the past hour. Right?
I've got more debit card transactions coming out of my ears. No, not really, but yeah.
And also a number of checks to be cleared, a target by 2020 to be 100 million. I guess this would be a much lower number than what we have in the past. Moving on to the other news, the government may include an end-of-life mechanism under the next automotive policy or the Malaysian automotive policy. Now, Chong, I think you are an auto guy and you would probably have a lot to say about this. What do you think of, first of all, what is end-of-life policy?
Okay, the end-of-life policy or cash for clunkers program basically is the more colloquial term. It means that there are incentive schemes to be put in place for you to get rid of your old car in exchange for a new car. And there are a whole ton of policy positives and policy negatives, both for and against the end-of-life policy. Obviously, for is that you get to invigorate your automotive industries because it means that the Protons and Prodors of this world and the third national cars of this world can push more of their cars onto the Malaysian public and you get to massage total industry volume to the good. The other one, of course, is of course the fact that newer cars are much more safe, much safer, much more economical, much more luxurious than old cars, and safety aspects and health aspects are very much the order of the day. But the policy negatives is that people can't afford to buy new cars. People can't afford to take high purchase schemes because their salaries are not just not high enough to accommodate the cost of cars, even the new cars of today.
That's right. So higher impact on cost of living. But, you know, I'm just fascinated by the definition of what a clunker is. That's a 10-year-old car or higher.
Your car is 10 years old,
yeah,
right?
I mean, there are a lot of 10-year-old cars on the road. There are they look still quite healthy. So to enforce something to end that life, to euthanize that car, may not necessarily be the most desirable policy, isn't it?
That's right. And like it or not, the fact that we are doing this as well is lending itself to this whole path to obsolescence because every single new thing that you buy today has a finite life to it. You know, mobile phones, for example, technology, in the words of Jean-Claude Beaver, the CEO of Tag Heuer, predicates itself on making the previous model, the previous incarnation obsolete because new software, new technologies, new capabilities.
Built-in obsolescence. Yeah, the iPhone people know
iPhone
totally
people,
about that,
they
right?
know all about
After
that.
After 2 minutes, the iPhone number 20, version number 20 comes out, and
exactly.
Then you've got to spend more money again.
And then if you own an Android phone, every single year there's this new ice cream vanilla or polka dot pie comes in, and then
I think
then
you're showing
your
age drunk.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but, you know?
Yeah, but this recycling law is not unique to us. Japan has such a policy where recycling is enforced at the cost of the customer, not the cost of the government or the car manufacturer. But I'm just not sure how Malaysia can even implement this because it will cost money to pay out cash to the car recyclers. And will it really necessarily help industry? Because we really don't have the economies of scale to compete in the world car market yet because our car's total volume a month is, what, 400,000?
Well, I tell you what, this Proton X70 is pretty darn good.
Yeah,
I've seen
that may be the case, you know, but are we producing enough cars to enforce this 10-year policy?
I don't know. It's a push, right? It's some much vaunted goal that we can get there eventually. The bigger objective for the three car producers eventually in Malaysia will be to export into the Chinas of this world, or the Indias of this world.
I don't know if we can compete against the likes of Audi and Toyota, which produce like 10 million cars a year compared to our 600,000 cars a year.
I tell you what, right?
How do we really lower down our costs?
I used to be a huge anti-Proton person, right? And I've seen the Proton X70 for what it's produced and what it's capable of at the price point of what, essentially $25,000 for the top-end model, maybe $30,000 for the top-end model. It's darn good value, man.
The question is whether Proton produced that or was it Geely, the Chinese?
Correct.
Be that as it may. It's coming up to 9 o'clock news and we'll be looking at what's happening in the stock markets and also a covering story on the price of gold and Netflix, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.